trying to with like to adjust within this like inch range. I was like,
"We're live." Well, I mean, we're not live. We're not recording.
We're getting ready.
No, I press record. So
Well, hey everybody.
Yeah, Waterways on the podcast. Ben Moore, Andrew Parham, Alex Shaw.
Still practicing how to hold a microphone.
Yeah, the Andrew, what's up?
I don't have mine figured out yet. Sorry.
No, you're about 6 inches away. We just went through the instructional course and you failed right away
already.
Yeah, it is funny though, because I end up forgetting a lot of instructions when we, not that there are a lot, but just a few little things like try not to breathe into the mic too much, and then also try not to speak with your voice, mic too far away from your mouth, and then I end up forgetting to tell people those things, and then I'm like mid podcast throttling the mic, and they just get confused.
Yep. So what you're missing here, since we don't have video, is that Alex is the only one with headphones on, so we have no check on our own voices. So when Alex starts not paying attention and, you know, swinging the mic around his head, we don't know what that means.
So, well, let's move on. Andrew, what is up? Second take on
what is up?
Closer.
Is that better?
I see... So anyway, we went surfing yesterday down in Virginia Beach at 49th Street. I'd never
made it to maybe 61st Street.
Yeah, it was quite a walk.
Gosh, yeah, hadn't anticipated that drift. But it was a great time. I don't know. It was a what would you say, waist high, roughly.
Yeah, sounds right. With a nice northern longshore current. That's the technical term for that drift.
Yeah.
The longshore current.
Andrew, what board were you surfing on?
A dilapidated old Time Machine. Unfortunately, it's my brother's board, so if he's listening to this, he knows better than anybody. I've just worn that thing out.
It's got a lot of duct tape on it.
It's got a fair amount of duct tape on it, but it's like a 5'8", twin fin, like a retro fish. I think he bought it from maybe a company down in Hatteras 1 year, like 10 or 15 years ago, for like $100 or something. And it may have been, you know, glassed over a second time, and it's taken a beating.
Is that your five? Is it a five?
I have no idea. There's no dimensions on it, so there's no way to really know. He's actually trying to talk to somebody about getting it shaped. Like a replica shaped of it, because I've just torn it to pieces. So.
You love that board. Every time I've surfed with you, you've got a couple boards to choose from, and that's my go-to.
She's faithful.
Yeah,
it is a cool looking board. That's a beautiful. It's got good lines on it.
She's faithful. You can ride that thing in just about any wave too.
I've seen you do that.
It's good.
It's good stuff. I saw you catch a few fun ones. What was Ben? What were your maybe two favorite little memories from yesterday?
I wonder if you're speaking about specific things.
I'm not. Okay, I'm not. Okay. Although I laughed because I know now. Since you laughed, I kind of know what you're gonna go for.
I guess there were good waves. I really enjoyed it. I realized while I was out there that I hadn't been surfing in cold salt since I got back from sailing this winter. So that was like my first time down at Virginia Beach. I'm still pretty sure that is accurate. I don't think I was at Virginia Beach earlier this spring. But yeah, that's what happens. You get older, you forget things. so that was cool. And then I caught a wave that I was enjoying a whole lot. I caught it as a right. And so I was on my toe side, and I took off down it, and I started to hear it get hollow, and you could feel the lip like pounding behind me, and I was like, I'm about to get barreled. This is great. Well, I almost got barreled. Eventually, the lip hit the back of the board and threw me off, but it was fairly fair. I mean, you could see the shadow and stuff.
Yeah.
And I pop up come off the back of it. I mean, and pop my head up, look back, and pretty much about from my perspective where I had dropped in, Andrew was about in that same area in the foam, and he was looking at me, and I was like, oh no, did I just do that? And what makes that worse is we had just had a conversation about how last time I surfed with Alex last fall that I was the guy who dropped on him over and over and over again.
Was that at Sandbridge?
Yeah, I was at Sandbridge, yeah.
And yeah, right by the pier, I think you snaked me like 3 or 4 times.
Yeah, that's because I was on the 9-6 aircraft carrier, and I can just catch every wave.
So you do what you want.
And I just do whatever I want on that
thing.
Get out
of my way, people.
Yeah, it's my way if I can catch it 4,500 yards out past you. But yeah, so since that had been brought to my attention, I was trying to be very aware of not getting on other people's waves. And then so the best wave that I'd had all day, turn around and look, and it looked to me like I had dropped in on Andrew, and I was really upset with myself. And I went over and asked him, I was like, hey, did you go left? And he's like, nah, I went right. And I was like, oh no, oh no. So I actually put myself in timeout. I swam away without saying anything, and swam down the beach a little ways and was like, I'm going to surf by myself because I can't be trusted with waves around other people.
Yeah, it what was good. That? What
my
was that
interpretation
like
was not as hostile. I didn't take it that way, but I there was a section in between us that I couldn't have made. So plus the benefit of watching somebody catch a wave and then claiming it as one of the best waves they've had all day. It's pretty good.
Yeah,
can't be
but
so mad. So
yeah, I thought
you enjoy that.
I noticed you going off. You kind of separated us for a little bit, and now that you've said that, I know why. But I thought you were just soul surfing. I was like, oh, okay, that's.
Yeah, I was trying to
go on.
It's called redemption.
He's going to do his own thing. That's fine.
Nobody put you there, though. That was self-induced.
It was. It very much was. But. Which kind of leads into my second memory, knowing that, you know, and when your body's stressed out, it's harder to like deal with emotions. I'd only gotten a couple hours of sleep the night before, most of them being in my car. And that definitely, you know, I realized that I was like, you know, or I thought that I was dropping it on someone, and I was really like down on myself for it. So that probably, added to the impetus of me swimming away and being like, rrr, 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 rrr.
Yeah. Yeah. That was what you got there at the Target parking lot and slept in your Jeep.
Yep.
From 1 to 4:30 or 5:15 or so when we picked you up.
It was like 2 to 5 or so.
That's hard, man. That's hard to, I mean, it's hard to put out when you're wiped out. I mean, you can kind of put your mind to it a little bit, but just from a straight physiology perspective, your muscles are not going to respond. Like your body's just not going to respond the way it would on a full night's rest.
That's very true. I was actually really happy with my performance on given that because when we were done, I realized how really done I was, and I was like, wow, I'm glad I got to surf at all because I was cooked afterwards. As you guys probably noticed, when I slept both ways completely, didn't say anything.
Yeah, the best was when we got to Virginia Beach. We stopped before we put in and went to McDonald's, and you got 2 bacon, egg, and cheese biscuits. And first of all, Andrew kept him in the console for about 5 minutes.
And just stared at him.
Yeah, Ben goes, hey, do you mind passing that back? And we're like, oh, why didn't you say something? And then you crushed, we thought, both of them. And then when we got back in the car to head back to Richmond, we heard you munching in the back. You'd saved the second one for lunch.
Yeah, I was too tired to eat both of them at once.
Yeah, yeah, it was good.
The irony in some of that, too, is I don't know if Alex told you, but we had a conversation leading up to going down because we have some accommodations we could have been involved with down in Sandbridge. And so we both decided, well, it's probably better just to sleep, you know, and get a good night's rest in our own beds the night before, which I think, you know, unfortunately we both did, but
yeah,
no, that's
yeah.
good. That's a good thing.
Well, I slept on my daughter's floor, which has become a habit now. Sometime around 2 o'clock, I end up getting going for dealing with nightmares, and instead of going up and down the steps multiple times to deal with that a few times a night, I just lay next to her on the floor and go, quiet, it's okay, and then just go back to sleep. But yeah, I mean, the funny thing about the tire, you know, being exhausted is, you know, we've talked about maybe a little bit recently just what you do from a training perspective. What's cool about surfing on a wave like at Z Dam in Richmond is that you can like feel how you're performing because the wave never really changes. I mean, it does, but if you're surfing, if you've surfed a 12-foot day rising and falling, you've kind of surfed a 12-foot day.
Definitely.
And so you can any variability in your performance, you can kind of chalk up to something. Whether that's being out of shape or being underslept or being hungover. And for me, I've noticed that's played a pretty significant role in my performance. And I'd say one of the most frustrating things for me, if I'm going out, if I'm taking the time to go surf, or paddle whitewater, or really take any time to do any type of activity where there's a degree of skill required, the most frustrating thing for me is not realizing my full potential in that activity.
Definitely. That is super frustrating.
Yeah. So any thoughts from the weariness perspective from you yesterday?
I think that it's in surfing the ocean, it's more there's a finer point to it where, you know, you have to perform at that time, because on a really flat bump, if like ZDM is peaking at whatever, you know, like 14 feet, if it's really flat, it's going to be near 14 feet all day. And then on, but when you're, even if all the other conditions are the same, the wind's the same, surfing the same break, the tide is always changing. And so like if you know that you're trying to get low tide in, and you're like, I haven't gotten to the point where I'm awake enough yet, or have recovered from last night or whatever, and you miss low tide or whatever tide you're looking for, then you miss it, and that's it. So I've definitely been out at ZDAM and spent a couple hours like recovering and like slowly working into it, and had a really productive day by the end of it. But I feel like surfing in the ocean, you know, like I feel like I always just like really try to access the tide that I'm looking for, and then so if I miss that because I'm not feeling right, that's no bueno.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot I like less than getting to a point where I'm so exhausted that the sets are still coming in and I've just got nothing for them. I mean Andrew, how many
that's
times have you
ever.
Yeah, how many times have you dealt with just, and what have you done maybe over the years to try to put a fine point on being prepared for when the swell comes up and it's time to go, and putting yourself in the best position to be, you know?
Yeah, well, I'd say, I've been that guy who paddles out basically as fast as I can, realize I'm gassed and I've got nothing left in the tank. So I paddle out a little bit further just so I don't get caught on a, you know, and have to do it all over again. And I just wait, you know, give yourself a little bit of time to recover. That's the benefit of, you know, surfing, I guess, at least. If you're fighting a tide, it's one thing. But if you can get out there and just sit and wait, you can kind of recover, get your arms back, and then go for the next one. But, yeah,
sometimes that takes an amazing amount of self-control to do that. I mean, even when you know, you're like, look, I can wait another 5 minutes and be, you know, like gain another 30, 40% of energy back just by waiting, I don't know, 4 or 5 minutes. That takes so much self-control, because you see that next set come in and you're like, that one's mine.
Yeah, I had a big problem with that yesterday. I mean, because we were out there for maybe three, four hours. Is that right?
Yeah, about 3 hours, I think. Yeah.
I have no idea.
Yeah, so you were you were soul surfing the whole time. We didn't know where you were. Yeah, so in fairness, you're out there for a good amount of time, but there's also, you know, talking about self-control, there's also self-control with not finishing a wave. So popping off of it before you ride it all the way down the line, and then realize you're like right at the the shore break, and you've got to paddle out all the way through, you know, all the way through all that garbage to get to the outside.
Yeah, definitely.
That's that last
section that's tiny, kind of fading away. Like, is it worth continuing to pump your way into shore, or do you just turn around and go back for another good one?
There's been a few times when you decide to keep pumping your way through, so it's kind of like when you're climbing and they say don't look down.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're paddling for like 5 minutes to try to get back out, or you know, maybe it's just 1 minute, and then you look back and you go, oh my gosh, and the sand is right behind you.
Yeah.
Holy cow, how did that happen?
To the second part of your question though, I mean, what do you do? I mean, we live in this reality where we work and we live in Richmond, and we're talking about heading out to Virginia Beach or Hatteras or something for, you know, an evening or a morning, or maybe a day if we're lucky and our arms can take it. What do you do in the interim so that you're ready for that? And that's something I've struggled with for a while. And I think, you know, it takes consistency, but it's hard to do when you don't have, you know, you check the swell and you're like, oh, it's flat again. What am I training for? And so I think it's good just to keep your arms moving in some capacity find stuff like you guys have talked about before, you know, finding your wave here in Richmond or finding something else to do on the water. And even if it's not on the water, it can be something else that just keeps you active in preparation for that time you get to go away. Because those days are becoming, you know, few and far between for me. So it's important that when I get the opportunity, I can capitalize on it, you know?
Yeah. So there's in the exercise physiology world, there's been a lot of conversation around the benefit of cross training. And there are some people who agree or disagree with it. They say, look, you can just be in general shape and that'll translate over to your activity, or you have to exercise specific for the activity. And I'm going to cop out and say it's probably somewhere in between, but I will say that, I mean, I run a fair amount. I haven't seen, you know, and I just started working out at the gym for the first time in maybe over a decade within the past few, like, month or two. I haven't seen an impact on my ability to surf better or perform more consistently just from running, like from being in shape. But in the past 2 months since I've been doing a ton of like Bosu ball squats. Andrew, you kind of turned me onto those. A bit more surf specific, like, you know, doing 3 push-ups and then popping up and doing that, a fair number of times and then repeat. This morning, went back and did something you told me about, which is, you know, just lay on your stomach and arch your back up and your legs up and then just put your arms out to the side and kind of pump those up and down and in front of you in a Y position and in a T position. But I'd say the biggest thing that's had an impact is those Bosu ball squats. I just feel strong. Like, I feel like I take impacts from the wave a lot better. I feel much more stable on the wave. And the other piece of feeling like I'm in better shape is there's kind of a confidence when I'm in an uncomfortable position to keep my head a bit more. I mean, we were surfing a couple weeks ago, Andrew, and you saw me kind of on the inside being a fool, and I felt tired, but I felt fine because I felt confident that, yeah, I had the ability to, A, hold, you know, been practicing breath hold, and so felt comfortable in there and was able to keep my wits about me. And then outside of that, I was tired, but not dangerously tired like I would have been maybe historically.
Yeah. And it's funny. I mean, I'm less than an amateur surfer and in no way like a personal trainer. So, you know, the things that I do to try to prepare for whatever sport it be is just sort of off of a feeling, you know, like, yeah, what feels right. I mean, it makes sense to do a Bosu ball squat because, you know, you're kind of working those muscles that you don't work when you just walk steady or run or jump on an elliptical or whatever. I mean, like, it's a stationary thing to some degree. You throw yourself in like a position where you're having to stabilize left, right, front, center, up, down, everything. I mean, it's tough to simulate what that feels like. So you try your best, but.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. You made a good point about having time to actually exercise. So if if you're in Richmond, it's funny to try to translate that to maybe the whitewater community, because there's an opportunity to actually go out and practice your specific sport every day. And so you can get better and better at that. One of the things I talk about in my professional life regarding risk management is we talk to a lot of clients about, hey, let's make the assumption that the system you operate within is going to fail. How would that influence how you operate, like, within that activity? And so for me, I think being in good shape, like, what if you went out and every time you went out, you made the assumption that you're going to have to drag somebody back to shore? And that, man, that requires a heck of a lot of, like, physical capacity. I think that would reorient a lot of us to how we engage in the activities. And I don't think it has to take the fun out of it either. I think that's what professional, like, that's the mindset that the professional surfers and whitewater folks take.
I think so. Yeah. I think that is one aspect of, like, sphere of awareness, of just being, like, part aware of what your body can handle and not going out and functioning at, 95 to 100% of what your body can handle all the time. You know, that you want to function. I guess I don't want to say this the wrong way. You want to push yourself, obviously, but you don't want to function at, like, the risk capacity of 95, 100% all the time. Like, we think about in whitewater functioning at, like, 60% or 50% of risk capacity, because when something does go wrong, then you need that extra space to be able to absorb like you said, pulling someone ashore, physically, bodily pulling them ashore, going and rescuing a boat, you know, like being able to get yourself out of a situation and get others out of a situation. So if you're functioning at like that 95% risk capacity all the time, when something does hit the fan, then you're over your 100, and that's where you don't want to find yourself.
I find I'm not very acquainted with the whitewater world. You know, my intro has been limited to that, in part to Alex and running on his raft with a stellar team. Shout out to Jay Sled.
Justin Sled.
You know, but it seems to me that in the whitewater community, guys are way more calculated in their approach to things, and maybe just take into consideration all the risks that are involved a little bit more heavily. You know, I've coming across that very few times in the surfing world. I think by and large, you kind of stand there on the beach and you look out and you hear the waves and you hear the sound and you're like, today's not my day. You know, I'm packing up and going back in, and it sort of weeds out, you know, the opportunity for that mistake. Or you start paddling out and you realize that, you know, you're not getting past this set, and so you might as well just turn around and go back.
Yeah, you don't make it out.
You can
exit. Come back in.
Yeah, eject. I've been there once or twice.
Yeah, I think to me, maybe to our conversation last time, surfing seems to have a little bit less of a supporting cast in the PPE regard. And so you can actually, I don't know how much, you've been more of a kayaker than I ever have been, so you could speak to how like physically exhausted you get. But like if you've got to rescue a swimmer, one of the things you can say is, hey, grab onto the back of my kayak, or get off, let go. But if you're surfing, the whole rescue process, if it's just you and your board rescuing somebody, is pretty awkward. Like, I mean, if you've surfed in Virginia Beach or Hatteras, Outer Banks, I can't count the number of just beachgoers that you've pulled out of, you know, I've pulled out of riptides, including really heavy folks, heavy kids, people who are panicked, who they just drag the boat down. They don't hear instruction. And you're, so it's not only about like, I've never rescued a fellow surfer. So I'm trying to put it in the context of what does that look like? And if it's somebody who's just kind of laying there like a dead fish, which is my experience with rescuing people, that's pretty physically demanding. Like you get in and I sit on the beach and I'm like puking. It's, you know. So I guess the interesting thing there is like yesterday I surfed until I was cramping, till my legs were cramping up, and I was like, dude, I gotta get out of here.
Because you didn't have the sodium from the bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit.
No, I didn't. I should have done that.
Replace sleep with McDonald's food.
Yeah, so if I had to, here, let's play this one out. This will be fun. If you had, so let's just make the assumption, what is the biggest fear that maybe a surfer has?
Realistic fear or, like, abnormal fear? Abnormal is wrong. I don't know. I feel like there's an unrealistic fear of sharks that anytime anyone hears surfing, that's like the first thing, if they haven't been out doing it themselves all the time, then the first thing they think of is, oh, there's these things that have teeth that I'm not used to in my daily life. I would consider that a relatively unrealistic fear. And I hope that I'm not hurting people's feelings, but that's what I think.
Yeah, but I had a buddy who... No, I'm kidding.
I've actually known people who got tasted before, you know, just a little bit. But yeah, I mean that.
Yeah, a guy in my men's group said down in the Outer Banks, his son got attacked by a shark when he was a little kid.
That happens, but still.
No, I get you.
They're out there. I mean, I've never gotten tasted. I've gotten bumped twice. Yeah. You know, I've had some encounters, but they're probably like those. You know, they're like 3 or 4 foot sand sharks, so they're probably not going to do you much harm, but they're still
yeah, I mean, they still got sharp things.
They're alive and well,
yeah,
flourishing
well. So let's take
tell if there's sharks in the water.
I feel like I know the answer to this.
Taste it if it's salty.
I did know that one. Let's make the assumption that every time, I just want to play this out, let's make the assumption that the unrealistic expectation that every time you go in the water, you were to be attacked by a shark. What would you do differently?
I would not go in the water. if that's what was going to happen every time, I would not go swimming.
Okay. What if you had to go in?
Okay. I guess group, the safety in numbers, like as many people as possible to make a big
then we
stir
could just snake each other's waves all day long.
I mean, it would, you know, just get a giant like one of those those like 9 foot by, no, nah, they're longer than 9 feet, maybe like 10 foot by like 4 foot long, six person paddle boards. You see J-O-B dropping into Jaws in.
Jeez. Yeah. Yeah.
Not Jaws, Pipeline in, yeah, yeah, when it's small. And just use those. I don't know, man. Just not be in the water, I guess. Which is, that's the answer to that is like,
go back to the
if
river.
You're a giant craft, then you're not really in the water.
You know what I've thought about? Or Andrew, what are you, do you have any thoughts on that?
On the sharks?
What you would do differently if you made...
If you were going to get bit every time you got in the water.
And you had to go in the water.
Oh, no, I would probably never surf again if I knew I was just going to get chomped on every time I went in there. Are you kidding me? It's not worth it.
I mean. No, but so, I hear you. What I'm getting at, though, is like for people who are going to continue to participate in the activities they participate in that do have an element of risk on multiple levels of, as you might say, analysis, how do you create a system so that when you fail, you might fail well without a catastrophic failure? And you know the image that keeps flashing in my mind? This is so absurd, but a surfer, like surfers out there with zip ties, this is so dumb, zip ties on all of their limbs to act as a tourniquet. So that if you got
just ready, you should market that to a wetsuit company.
No wonder you were cramping by the end of your session.
Yeah, just a wetsuit that has zip ties ready to be activated immediately. You just press, you know, like pull like a cord somewhere in your wetsuit and then zip ties your left leg or your right leg. Or you get the upper femur, the lower femur, the tib fib, and then, you know, a couple places on your arms too.
Yeah, well, I mean, so it's that's ridiculous. And that's.
So is it safer to surf with a wetsuit on for compression?
I don't know. I feel like it would be harder to get to the wounded area.
I feel like in a small shark situation where you just bump into something and it has its mouth open, then having a wetsuit on gives you, you know, an extra couple millimeters of the tooth didn't go into you. You get a scratch, yeah, instead of stitches.
Well,
maybe.
Alex, you know some arborists. Can you like weave in a chap or something to that thing like arborists use? And
yeah, that's true. Like chainsaw PPE for sharks.
You know what's interesting about a lot of the like table saws and different saws that they've got now, they're expensive, but they actually, the blades pick up electrical signals so that when they touch your body, they immediately stop.
I saw that meme with the guy throwing the hot dog into it, and yeah, the saw falls apart instead of cutting the hot dog.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, they're cartridges that they cost $80 a cartridge, but if you talk to anybody, you know, in a business, they'll tell you, yeah, $80 is nothing compared to
a finger. Oh yeah, definitely.
400 grand to pay for a thumb. If you're going to lose a finger, a digit, the thumb is the most expensive digit to lose. But I don't know. Maybe this is a dumb question, but appreciating that most of the people listening are going to keep, you know, running rivers, they're going to be surfing, they're going to be whitewater kayaking, canoeing, and rafting. If they made the assumption that every time they went out, any given piece of the puzzle might fail, what would they do differently? So when you think about whitewater, it's true, I gather, that most deaths are from heart attacks, maybe not drowning, or a significant number of commercial rafting trips. If you've got customers who fall in, are going to be deaths or fatalities are going to be driven by heart attacks, not necessarily drowning. It might be an equal distribution, but it's surprisingly a good amount of cardiovascular issues. And so if you knew that, would you bring a defibrillator or something along those lines, drop $5,000 for one of those?
Yeah, I don't know those numbers specifically, but I do know that happens also, you know, that any type of adrenaline causing activity can trigger those things. I think that there's a road you go down when you start to say, okay, well, the next thing is to get an AED or whatever. And that's that road of lots of gear. I think that, the like fallback all the time. And when you posed it that way, instead of just saying the shark thing, when you posed it, there's like, in general, if you're going out doing these things, whether it's professionally or for fun, how do you, if you expect your system to fail every time, what is it that you do to back it up? I think that, go back to our earlier conversation, is just be in the best shape you can be and function at a comfortable, less level of risk capacity than your body can take. all the time, so that when it does fail, the thing that you're relying on most, your body is ready to go and can absorb that extra, I don't know how you make a percentage out of risk, but, you know, 45% of risk or whatever that you're functioning on, that you can handle it immediately. You know, you can't, you trust yourself to be able to pull someone on a rope enough that they are at shore before they float into that strainer, or that you can swim a board on top of a board fast enough that you can push a kayak that's full of water another extra 4 feet to get it into an eddy instead of going downstream or whatever, any of that stuff.
Yeah. And I don't want to be the, I mean, I guess another piece is you don't want to be the fun police, but if you think about how, I mean, you think about, if you talk to Riley Gorman, you talk about firefighting and how often do you train? Andrew, you brought it up earlier. It's tough to go to the gym and train when you're like, when's the next, what, you know, the forecast is flat for the next 2 weeks. What am I training for? But invariably the surf does come up and the river does swell up and gets big. And so you can't get prepared on 2 days' notice, that's for sure. And so how are you training on a consistent basis, whether it's, you know, continuing ed courses, wilderness courses, you know, first aid CPR, whitewater rescue courses, just being physically in good shape if you've got a big trip, maybe not staying out so late the night before, or, you know, making sure you're sharp. Ben's smirking over here. He's like, fun police.
Whatever. I'd much rather have been sleeping in my bed than driving back from Norfolk.
Yeah. I don't know. It's one of those things where to me, it just feels like you want to be in a position, you never quite know when you're going to need it. It's like an all the time, every time for the one time type deal. Like, if you think about your seatbelt, you never, like, I've never needed my seatbelt, but I've worn it every time because I don't know when I'm going to need it. And so I operate with the assumption that every time I get in my car, I'm going to need it. Something along those lines. So I guess what I'm trying to do is,
that's a great analogy for it. That is a great analogy for it.
Yeah, I'm just trying to translate a little kind of that sentimentality over to surfing and whitewater without becoming overly burdensome. Because for sure, I've definitely seen folks who have a pump and a backup pump and a backup pump. And you're like, dude, how many pumps are you going to bring along? And, you know, there's definitely a case for a backup pump. What is that? A K pump? Not a K pump. What's the little?
Yeah, the one that's like all in one cylinder, yeah. And it's not, you don't stand on it. Yeah, the K pump.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely a case for that for sure, especially if you're out in the middle of nowhere. But anyhow, I mean, just a point of kind of a point of interest for me specifically, just because as I get older and I look at the profile of the people I tend to be going on the river with, it's people like my kids and, you know, and close friends and so and family, and I feel a way more responsible. Not that you don't feel responsibility on a commercial trip, but you're less connected to those folks.
Yeah, I think that going, again, not to beat a dead horse, but going back to maybe look at it like, you know, you put in the energy you can in between when you're going out, you know, stay in the best shape you can or whatever. And obviously whatever level you choose or whatever level you can get to with that, that's great. And then that's your, not your baseline, but your top line. And then from there you drop down and function somewhere that's significantly less than that limits out at. I guess the day that you're actually going out and doing the thing, whatever you're going to do, look at it as it's a privilege to be able to function at that higher level. The privilege being that you worked hard to get to that higher level. And if you're not there, then don't try to go run this. Don't try to go surf that. Step it down and, you know, go around the other side of the point where the waves are nowhere near as big, or don't go out with your friends and run class five that day. Be like, I know I'm not at that shape. I'm going to go run class three today or whatever.
You've got experience with walking away. That's a hard, I think there's like a little bit of a stigma associated with that, and probably somewhat of a healthy stigma with, you know, pushing your boundaries of your confidence and competence, which I think overall is a healthy thing, but that for sure can get you in trouble. But there are some cases, like Andrew, you talked about the wedge, that where it's just kind of very clear that is
monster.
That's not your forte.
Yeah, I mean, it's obvious. I guess at some point it becomes very obvious that you're not qualified to interact in an environment, and so you just don't get in the water. I mean, like, I don't know how this is for whitewater, but I'd assume there's some days where you look at Mighty James
Yeah. Not James.
And you just and you would just say there's no way anybody's getting in that thing. Or you know, I would have to be with two of my best, you know, my best friends who I know are solid and can perform better than I can in the crazy situations to feel good about that. And most, I would say the times I've not gone out, you know, are times when I've been, you know, I'm going to make a solo trip down. I'm going to go out. I'm going to have fun. Couldn't get the buddy to go with me. And then I stand there and I'm like, this just isn't smart. I mean, there's not even anybody else out there and I'm solo. You know, it's January 3rd and or whatever. It's freezing cold. Like, you know,
nobody
I'm just not
going to
make that call. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember Hunter Davis talking about, my brother Andrew was kayaking down in Asheville on the green with Hunter Davis. And I think Hunter was down there for a long time and he walked some of the big five and Andrew was talking to him about that. And he was like, big three. Why did I say the big five?
Golly, maybe.
Or being wiped out, or ignorant. That's
you have
probably
five fingers.
Fair enough.
Minus
one hand. Yeah. Saying that, that he had a conversation with Hunter and Hunter was like, yeah, I walk the big three every once in a while because he's like, I've run these more times than I can count. And at a certain point, it's a numbers game. Like you keep running really, really hazardous, dangerous stuff, and at some point you're going to get caught. And so, on days when you walk up and you look at it and you're like, you know what, I'm not feeling it, you should walk away from it. And it's hard to do, especially when you're right there and you're looking out and you're going, man, I drove all the way down here, I made all this, took all this effort to get here.
Yeah, definitely. That line is hard to draw and hard to stay on one side of or the other side. It's hard. It's challenging.
So Ben, what board were you surfing yesterday?
I was surfing an actually looked it up afterwards because I was you'd said something about one of you two, I can't remember, said something about the, I think it was you, Andrew, actually said something about the thickness of it and how it was kind of skinny for a long board. But yeah, it's a 9-0 nose rider. It has very little rocker to it, and it's fast swimming. But yeah, it'd be nice to be like, I don't know, 10 pounds lighter on it, just to be a little bit higher out of the water.
Yeah,
yeah. It was cool seeing how you, Andrew, surf, and we talked about it on the ride back a little bit about what availability you have to do certain things on waves, depending on if you're riding a board like you were, a little bit shorter, or like I was riding a 9-foot with a lot of rocker, and then some concavity on the bottom, and then some sweet chines that, you know, I've just got mine souped up to the gills.
the reverse camber,
single fin. But it was cool to see how you were really in it, for several of them. And then, and the cool thing about that is like, I don't know, maybe speak a little on the feeling you have when you're just right in the mid. That's a fun board to surf those types of waves with.
Yeah, it can be a lot of fun to be, you know. I think the challenge with a longboard in a wave that starts to get a little, I don't know, top to bottom or starts to peak a little and you're dropping in is, especially when you don't have much rocker to it, your nose is straight in the ground, or you better be on that thing so early that you can just ride it out. You know, but on a shorter board, you can just wait till the last minute and just suck it into your, you know, knees to your chest and just drop on it, and which is a lot of fun. And you get hammered a couple times, which is fun too. But yeah, I think I was thinking a little bit about there's a difference, you know, boards and surfing. I mean, obviously there's some utility to it and you want to have the right board for the right occasion. But I think there's a big part of the surfing community that would say, you know, surfboards are, you know, the making of a board is an art form, and how you ride a board and how you approach a wave is partly an art form. I mean, would you say that's common to hear in the whitewater community as well? When you watch a guy taking lines on a kayak or a raft, I mean, is that communicated in that same way?
I'm gonna make a whole bunch of rafters mad, but in kayaking, the design of a boat, it very much like a surfboard. You're looking for like I mean, down to the minutia of like, you know, like 3 inches forward or back when it starts to go from this angle to that angle, like very, very small stuff to make the boat perform a certain way. And rafts are school buses.
Fair.
No, there are rafts, especially as you get into smaller rafts that they're like tweaking it to make it possible to run harder and harder stuff. But
Tie River at 1,000 CFS.
Sure. Or the green, like people running gorilla in a raft. But I mean, those are small, like they're made to be high performance. Most rafting is commercial rafting, and it's like we need something that's stable and puts a lot of people in there, but you can still turn. And that's it. But yeah, kayaking, much more thought process, like surfing, goes into that because you want something that performs to a high level.
Is there like kayak videos out there? Like just watching guys kayak and stuff? I didn't know that. I mean, I've never seen one. I'm going to have to be enlightened here.
Yeah, afterwards we'll watch some. Yeah, there's tons of it's the same exact in that aspect. Same thing as a surf scene.
Is there like an endless summer in the kayak community?
No. I don't think so. There's not a quintessential. If you're gonna say the quintessential like vibe of the endless summer, there's a big production movie called Deliverance, which I would say is like the same vibe as endless summer, except not of that same vibe at all, but like, I
mean, it's a cliche, you know,
right yeah, but the cliche of like, yeah, this is the thing. Yeah, I mean, Deliverance has real whitewater, you know, moves in it.
Yeah,
I mean, there were canoes, but I mean they were running some crazy things for the size boats they were in back in the early 70s, I guess it was. But yeah, I think that the endless summer was like the original for like all adrenaline sports. I mean, I think that kayaking can trace its video lineage back to that, like skiing can, snowboarding can, like that was the movie. Everything else came after that.
Yeah.
So when you were asking about art form, you were talking about different shapes and different styles of surfboards for different conditions, maybe. But from an art form perspective, you mentioned on the ride back yesterday that there's a lot of different boards, but a lot would argue you really only need two, and you can do a lot with those two.
Yeah, well, I think that was, you try to boil it down out of simplicity's sake to having, you know, two, maybe three boards that you feel like you can, especially in our situation, you're not going to take, you know, 15 boards in the truck with you and pull one. And maybe, you know, if you live there, you're going to have a whole shack full of boards and pick the best one. But yeah, I think there's a utility aspect to it, you know, to try to select the best board for the wave that you're riding that day. But when it comes to creating a surfboard, shaping a board, I mean, I've heard guys talk about it as, I mean, there's like this romance to it or something. There's a, you know, connection. I've never done it, and I don't really know a whole lot about it to speak to it well. But you know, it's a craft, and it's not just creating a tool for a purpose that's utilitarian. You know, it's very much creating a piece of art, and it's something to be seen and beheld, I guess, a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, so for me, one of the art pieces of that is that it can be a little bit reverse engineered, or maybe that's not the right word, but when you think about any sport, it seems to me like the people who are the best, they teach you fundamentals, and then you go watch them, and it's almost like quantum physics. You know, if you take physics, they teach you one thing, and then they're like, here's quantum physics, everything we taught you in physics 101 and 102, forget that, throw it out the window, here's a whole new paradigm. And whether it's like jiu-jitsu or boxing or whitewater sports, one of the things I feel like I've noticed is there's this here are the fundamentals, and so this is the board you use. The less artistic part, I think I would say, is like, here's the board you use for these conditions, here's the kayak you use for these conditions, here's the move you should make in this section of the fight or whatever round you're in or whatever, you know, condition you're in. And then when you get to a point of mastery, that's, I think, where the art form comes in, where you're able to you're the arbiter of the tool. Like, you create whatever you want with the tool you've got, regardless of the conditions, if you will. And so, you know, you look at Jamie O'Brien surfing, Pipeline at like
on an inflatable 12 feet, lobster.
Like, yeah.
Make I don't a know mockery if that, of everyone
I don't
else.
Know, yeah. I don't know if that's an art form. But, you know.
No, I like think it is.
A
9-foot
longboard, like, in super overhead conditions, and you're like, holy cow. And he's leaning way in. It's that to me is taking a tool that maybe wasn't even designed for its that purpose and making it so.
Very much so. I think that goes very that's I don't want to use the word definition because that's so cliche. I'm trying to think of another word. That is the art of it. Is getting to that point where you can do what you want with the conditions you have with anything and make something of it.
A 2x4.
Yeah,
sort of like
definitely.
your interpretation of how
yeah,
that
very much so.
How that would go. I maybe it's wrong, but I could see that looking at how you would, you know, what sections you would take on a river. You know, when we went out rafting, you were very much, hey, you better line up beside this rock and cut this way, and I need you to paddle harder. And there's a lot of direction involved. Thank God, because you know the other two guys on the boat had no idea what we were doing. But I would guess at some point if you've taken that section of the river 15, 20, 30 times, I mean, maybe you're going to say, I'm going to approach this a little differently and interpret this section a little differently today.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the cool things from an art form perspective that you know, for folks in the paddling community around Richmond, you know, I think Ben, you checked me out as a guide, and have done so for a lot of people. And one of the cool things about observing folks who've been around for a while is the efficiency with which they paddle or have others paddle, or conversely, how they don't have them paddle. Like how much, you know, in observing how you run a raft, how almost effortless it is to a degree. You don't over paddle folks. You kind of you're set up really well. You've got a good feel for the river. You know what you can get away with. You know where you got to push and pull. And I think I'm honing that, but I'm still at times a little bit more of a bull in a china shop, which is like the default is when in doubt, charge, you know, just go at it, you know, hard. Sooner rather than later, whereas you've got the experience, the temperance and or temperament and temperance, and
temperance,
the scarlet letter, and the experience to allow you to kind of pick your spots and be efficient with your paddlers.
Yeah. I think that you're right about the default. The default is, when in doubt, you know, push harder in that situation, you know, like the speed gets you over top of things. So when in doubt, you know, gain momentum. But then I guess like you said, it's as you start to recognize the signs it's giving you, just like in the ocean, you know, like you can use a rip to get back out past the break, you know, but like, that's not what you tell someone when they first go in, because they're going to get in a rip and like all of a sudden they're like half a mile offshore.
Yeah.
But that works though. It's the same thing. It's just recognizing something for what it is. But at first, you know, the default needs to be this, but then when you recognize it, you can like play with the edges of it some. But again, cliche, let the river do the work. There's a current that's going downstream. You want to utilize your energy, or the energy of your raft, which is finite. Your customers, your guests will eventually burn out. You want to utilize them as efficiently as possible. So get in the downstream current and run it as much as you can without utilizing them, and then utilize them when you need them to move in or out of it is, I guess, like the idea.
Yeah, I struggle. It's so funny because I think, you know, that's the type of instruction you give beginners. And I mean, I hear that. I remember in jiu-jitsu classes hearing that early on where they'd say, you know, all you have to do is do this. And I'm like, I can't. I physically, you're making it look so easy, but I can't flex that far. I can't make that transition. My timing's off. And I guess a big lesson is just that one of the ways to get there is through time and repetition. I mean, just spending a lot of...
I think that's the only way. Yeah. I think it's the only way to get there is just knowing the thing, you know, being like very well acquainted with your medium.
Yeah, unless you're Justin Sled, and then the first time you get on a raft, you're an immediate master, and you just paddle Yeah, Andrew and I had a fun trip with another guy, a buddy of ours, and
let's get the band back together, man.
We have to. He's not good with idle hands. He can't take instruction.
If the next raft guy that takes Justin out listens to this podcast, they're gonna not give him a paddle. Just be like, you sit in the middle of the raft. Sit. Justin, I don't really know you, man. I'm sorry to talk at you like that, but yeah, next time that you go rafting, they're just gonna be like, sit in the bottom of the boat.
Yeah,
here's some fish.
Is it frustrating? Like when you want to nail a section and do it right, and then you miss it, and you're like, oh, jeez, we gotta like get the car, drive all the way back up to do this again. Like you're running laps, but you know, surfing, you just like if you got the arms left, you just paddle back out and try to get the next one. Like
hopefully, there's another section downstream. I think that question is answered two different ways: rafting or kayaking. Rafting, you know, like the trip goes downstream. You know, so like if you completely botch something, you just try to like salvage as much of the people's morale as possible that are in your boat and be like, we got this next one coming up. But yeah, if you're kayaking, you botch something, you're like, I want to do that better. And you get out and walk back up and do it again.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, good point. You can.
Yeah. I've never had that experience personally of botching or missing a line on a trip.
Ever.
Yeah. I mean, I even timed the pulse of the rooster tail just so that there's an extra spray.
I don't miss.
Your eddy line work is impeccable. You're like, I'm going to be another 4 inches that way to slow down a half a second.
Well, man, I guess in wrapping up, what a fun time. I mean, we just run our mouths here, but what a good time yesterday. And even just being out there with other people that we don't know. I mean, there's a huge joy in watching strangers kind of take off. You know, they kind of, you're not seeing a lot of waves come through. Maybe there's a little bit of a pause in the action, and then you look, you know, 100 yards down, and you see folks still firing off, and it's just good to be out there, good to be with people, good to be in the sun, and it's almost bareback time, which I'm
almost.
So
Alex was ready to take off his wetsuit yesterday and go surf in shorts.
Yeah,
both Andrew and I said that might not be the best idea. That might shorten your session more than you were hoping for.
As the guy on the beach looked at me and he said, "Yeah, that thing got a hood."
Yeah,
it does, man.
Well, yeah, man, it was good spending time with you guys. I'm just always reminded it's the, you know, it's a bummer living 2 hours away from the beach, but the other piece of that is you get 2 hours in the car with your buddies to just have stupid conversations, for Ben to sleep, and then 2 hours back to kind of soak it up and just be exhausted and feel great. And so hope you guys out there listening have an opportunity at some point this week to get out with your folks or maybe next week, and hope to see you out there. Andrew, thanks for hanging out with us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming out, man. Yeah,
it's been good.
Everyone go get out in the water.
Peace out.
You.